You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah.
This is WBCR LP 97.7 on your FM dial, broadcasting from downtown Great Barrington in the Berkshire Hills of Western Massachusetts. That was The Doors. And this is Mickey Friedman. And this is The Other Side. There are, of course, many sides and many truths. This show is about some of the other sides of the story. My pick of the many stories out there. This week, we present excerpts from a workshop on military counseling, advocating for GI rights, issues of military recruiting, and counter-recruiting. We hear from Robert Dove of the New England Regional Office of the American Friends Service Committee and Neil Berman of the GI Rights Hotline. An article in the May 14, 2005 edition of the UK Times puts these issues in perspective. Entitled, "Young Turn Their Backs on Life in the U.S. Military," the article states, Major General Michael Rochelle of the Army Recruiting Command said the military was facing the toughest recruitment climate of the all-volunteer era. The U.S. Army will start its 2006 fiscal year, beginning in October, with less than 10% of its 80,000 recruitment goal signed in advance. It likes to have more than a third on its books at that point. The Army has missed its targets for 3 months, falling short by 42% in April. It is not a bright picture, General Rochelle said. Listen to Robert Dove, then Neil Berman.
What does it mean to be a recruiter? It means that you work full-time, and it means you have a quota. Right now, the quota is about 2 a month. There's some variation depending on what branch you're in, but that's basically what we're looking at. Full-time job to get 2 people a month. And they're falling short of the goal. So all those words I just used a minute ago really come into play. Career training, money for college, becoming a professional, and bonuses. I can't tell you the number of people who have said to me, I thought that when I signed up, I would have $15,000. If the package you've signed up for is 3 years of active duty, you will get $15,000 in 3-year increments. $5,000 at the end of your first year, $5,000 at the end of your second year. If you signed up hoping to get $15,000 for your family, you are going to be real mad real fast, because it doesn't work that way. And that's true of a whole lot of things. Surveys in the military right now indicate that there is at least 60 to 65% of folks in the military who are not satisfied with what is going on with those career option things they were told about. But it's worse than that, because when you join, you say what you would like to be trained for. And all kinds of people fail to notice this statement that is in the enlistment paper. Quote, laws and regulations that govern military personnel may change without notice to me. Such changes may affect my status, pay, allowances, benefits, and responsibilities as a member of the armed forces, regardless of the provisions of this enlistment/re-enlistment document. Translation, we gotcha, we get to do with you what we want. You want to be trained to be an engineer? Well, we need foot soldiers. Too bad. Career options don't work. They haven't worked. Even Dick Cheney, way back when he was Secretary of Defense, said, this isn't a job training corps. Some of them will admit it. But the career, the recruiters still use it to try to get you in. What else do they do? Money for college, up to $70,000, they just increased it, it was $50,000 last year, up to $70,000 for college when you get out, up to, up to? Anybody in the workforce and civilian life knows what the sales pitch that starts with up to means. And in this case, what isn't said is all the caveats that go in front of the up to. To get any money at all, you have to put $100 a month of your salary into a kitty for the first year. So everybody's putting in $1,200. And they don't get any of it back, whether they get any help with their education or not. It's gone. The General Accounting Office has determined that the Department of Defense has taken in as much money as it has given out, some benefit. So you want to go to college. What you have to do to get any of that money at all is you have to have had at least 3 years of active duty. You have to have had certain jobs. When I heard that, I thought, well, what jobs are these? So I called trying to find it out. The list changes. You have to take the jobs that nobody else wants. You have to be doing stuff that they need at the moment, and that what's on that list keeps changing. So it's not something you can tell people in advance. But unless you have one of those jobs, and you've been active for 3 years, and you get an honorable discharge, you don't get any money. Any. What you usually get when you get some money is just that. Some of it. Most folks are getting enough money to go to about 2 years of state-run college. Because another way, just like those bonuses, it's paid in increments. If they grant you $12,000 for college assistance, you get $12,000 spread over 4 years. So you get $3,000 a year. Where do you go for that? What's going on for us now who staff the GI Rights Hotline is that we're discovering that somewhere around the second week of basic training, all of this comes home. This is when we get the phone calls, when everybody figures out they've been lied to right, left, and center about career options and money for college, and they've just heard now that when they finish their initial phase of basic training, the advanced training where they get their military status, their job, is not what they wanted. It's got to be something else. People are real unhappy, feeling really betrayed, and not knowing what to do, because there's no question in their mind that they're in. I mean, they not only signed up, they're in basic training. They're lucky if they can make a phone call at that point, depending on what service you're in. talk about next is in some ways the most disquieting part of this. Who are the people for whom the military represents best option? You just got a sample of it. People who think they have nothing else to choose from. That's not everybody, but it's a lot of people. So recruiters target high schools where there is a large percentage of relatively poor people, which also usually means people of color. It's no good going to the high school in Belmont. You don't get anybody because they're all going to college and they've got the money to do it. And it's like, the scheme doesn't work. They're not worried about their future financially. Maybe a little, but not really. There's not much of incentive. How do recruiters work? Somebody mentioned it earlier, the No Child Left Behind Act. Every school that gets any federal aid whatsoever, which is every school, is required to allow the military to have access to two different things. One is the school records of who's in school, name, address, phone number, and secondly, access to the school itself. They have to be allowed to come in and promote joining the military. 80% of the enlistees in the military come from this access to high schools through the delayed entry program. It's a big thing. Military has lots of tools when it shows up at a school. It's almost overwhelming what they've got. There are things called adventure vans, cinema vans, multi-exhibit vans. The Navy's got an exhibit van, and the Air Force has got something called rovers. There are four 60-foot-long vans that they presently have, which tour the country, although I found out recently that none of them come to New England. I guess we're not a hot market like some places. This van, 60 feet, folks, they park it in the lot of the school, and you walk in one end and you come out the other, and in between you have video games, which give you all kinds of practice at things like shooting. Though nobody at the other end seems to die. And this is also one of the things that we noticed over time, which was there's clearly a policy in recruiting materials which show you the skill of shooting and doing everything else. But nobody dies at the other end of the game. The carnage is left out of the footage. You know, and that's intentional. Because if you emphasize that, nobody's going to join. Because they realize they could be at the other end there too, getting shot. So there's a lot of hype plugging into the video game culture of a 17-year-old, really is. There are military instructors in schools teaching courses. The military pays for half of that, which saves the school money. And they're not teaching military courses, they're teaching math. They're teaching things so the school doesn't have to pay for it. The military gives out a career test, which some schools are now using instead of something that they would have to pay for. Because the military will come in and administer the test and, you know, talk to students about how well they've done and what they should be doing with their lives and everything else, and it saves the school a pot of money. It's being woven into the fabric of schools as part of the regular curriculum, part of the regular services that guidance counselors normally have to deal with. Guidance counselors are encouraged to recommend certain students to the military recruiters. People get called at home. Individual students get called at home. And no one knows, except for the schools which have figured out there's something wrong here and have been taking some action about how to prevent that. The No Child Left Behind Act allows that. Someone can sign a form and give it to your school, and the school then doesn't release that kid's name to the military recruiter. A few schools have gone proactive with this and have said that they won't, as a policy, give the names of their students to the military recruiters unless someone gives permission. Rather than having some sign a form saying, I refuse to give permission, you have to be signing a form saying, I do give permission, or the military doesn't get anything. And when that happens, of course, now the military has actually taken some of these schools into court, suing them from the No Child Left Behind Act that you're not allowed to do that. School's got a guidance counselor, right? These people get co-opted into this. We now have something from Selective Service that allows teachers or other staff members in high schools to be officially entitled Selective Service Representatives. What happens is they wind up being aides to the recruiters. So you've got teachers in high schools who are becoming recruiters in the schools, and they don't look like recruiters, they look like your teacher. It's very hard to opt out. Lots of times schools don't tell you at all, or it's on page 27 of the handbook, and you know how long it takes you to get to the handbook the first week you're in school. So there have been some brave schools, but most of them just capitulate. Here's the other part. School records. What's the school record? So the school doesn't give the military recruiter the name and address of some student because the parent signed a form. But there is a school handbook, which is public property, which comes out every year, which lists the name and address and phone number of every student. So you don't have to get the school records to find this information out. It's right there. Anybody has it. Every parent's got it. It's like, it's nothing for a recruiter to find this information out. What's worse is they don't stop with school records. They go and get court records, which are also public documents, and find the kids who are in trouble, whose parents might really like the idea of their kid getting some self-discipline. It goes on and on and on, so that at every turn, you have recruiters at your door, on your phone, in your school, in the lunchroom. It's pretty hard to get away from it. And if what they're offering is a way out of poverty, it's a big draw. We do not have $3 billion to spend on alternative counseling. Maybe that's just as well. Maybe we will be more successful at the direct one-on-one approach than the big glitz. Because most of the time, while the big glitz dazzles us, when we find out it's a lie, we don't want another big glitz to take its place. We're looking for truth. We want people who listen. And that's where you all come in. I want to say one other thing about equal access. Military gets to go into school, so do you. We've won at least two appellate court cases now where, to the degree that they let the military in, they have to let alternatives in as well. So if the military gets to make a presentation at the assembly, so does your local peace group. If the military gets to sit in a room somewhere so that people can go visit them, so do we. If they get to sit in the lunchroom, so do we. If they get to put stuff up on the bulletin board, so do we. Basically, courts essentially held that this was just, you know, a right. It was a constitutional right to be able to have alternatives presented. Often you have to wind up talking to the school board rather than just the superintendent, because the superintendent is like, you know, a person who has a job, and they're scared about their job. It takes a community group with power to say yes, often. Among other things, our best advocates for alternative, for counter-recruitment, are students themselves, who actually have access to other students, you know, without permission, thank you very much, are really useful. You get people who can push, you know, who can give out literature, who can talk to people, who can make themselves known. And sometimes you can actually get to guidance counselors who can have stuff in their office when kids come ask about this. As long as the approach that we take is one of reason and alternatives and not pushing a specific partisan political objective, we have some success. This is not about being successful all the time. This is about being successful as often as you can, which is, it matters. You know, it matters tremendously to every single person who finds out that less than 35% of the people who join the military get any money for college. 70% of people in civilian life who apply for some assistance going to college get it. The track record is that there are more alternatives for financial aid and for career training in the civilian world than there are in the military. We need to let people know that. We need to let people know that having signed up for the military in your senior year in high school or your junior year in high school does not oblige you to go in. Go through the clothes of the soldiers who died. the hotline receives occasional calls from recruiters who want to get out. It's called this: I'm working 90 hours a week and I'm being told to lie and I can't stand it anymore. My life's a wreck. I don't sleep. While you're trying to figure out how to get alternatives into schools to promote the other version, think about how you could befriend your local recruiter. They might need your help too. Not for the job they've got, but to get out of the job they've got. Consider finding ways to let them know that you're there for them as well in this absolutely untenable position that they find themselves in. So that when you are in the position of countering what they do, that they understand that you're not trying to make their life harder as a person, but, and you know, I urge you to do this because in the few cases where I know it's happened, it has made a real difference. One of the biggest things that happens when you get a call from someone in the military who wants out is that you are regularly dealing with people who have the experience that nobody listens. It's not just the young recruit. It's the guy who's been in for 6 years. The chaplain doesn't listen. The psychiatrist doesn't listen. And nothing's confidential. You can't talk to anybody. If they can talk to you, it will save their life sometimes. It really will. So don't write them off because the job they've got is awful.
They are having huge problems. As to the numbers, the now they're admitting that they're not hitting their goals. But the reality is, as anybody who's dealing with things that are in trouble knows, first thing you do is lower your goals. They haven't been hitting the goals they wanted really since the war started in Iraq. And one of the reasons I believe is, as has been shown consistently since World War I, they started looking into this, people don't mind getting killed. They'll join the military. They're not that afraid of being killed. They don't want to kill people. They don't mind being afraid. You know, they're like, okay, that's something that I have to learn how to deal with. But when they understand they have to shoot somebody, they don't want to join. And that's the first thing that seems to hit in basic training. Is I know I saw one study that said during World War II, 2/3 of the soldiers weren't firing their guns. And the reason they react so strongly in basic is they're being broken down from that normal reaction. And so I have found that when talking to these people, one of the things that you do find yourself saying to them is, it's okay. That it's normal to not want to do what you're being told. They're all going, I'm the only one in my unit, because no one's saying anything. And they talk about lying in the barracks, and there's people crying, but nobody says anything. And in the morning, nobody talks about anybody being unhappy. And we find ourselves just listening to them saying, you know, you're not wrong.
Right.
And like Robert's always saying, they're so thrilled that you're just willing to tell them they're right. Because no one else is telling them, including family. One of the, I think, the strongest things that gets people to know beyond poverty is tradition. My father, my grandfather, all my uncles were in the military, so I joined. They didn't even think about it. And that's one of the things you'll run into is people say, how can they do this to me? And Rob is so true. They all think that they can quit their job. And it's one of the worst things is there is nothing you can do.
Actually, I want to add this. It's another recruiting trick that I forgot to mention because it's so absurd. I think I locked it away most of the time. Recruiters actually say to people, try it for 6 months, and if you don't like it, because that's what you do anywhere else. You know, people get jobs and they're on 6 months probation and they can quit, or their employer can say, sorry, it's not working. So people believe it. Try it for 6 months. The grain of truth is that for the first 6 months while you are in, your superior officer can cut you loose with what is called an entry-level separation in that first 180 days. So there's a grain of truth in it, in that the military can dismiss you because they feel like it, but there isn't any way that you get to decide to leave.
One last thing, and I don't know where this is going, but there's a case in Washington State of a fellow who refused to go when his unit was activated. And the judge announced that as far as he could see, there is no contract with the military. Everybody always talks about the contracts and what's going on with it. Well, this guy said, there's no contract. You signed up. And nobody knows where this is leading because it's against everything that everybody's assumed. Even if you don't get much, you get something when you sign up. They say they can change everything. Well, if you can change everything, there's a contract they're changing. But this judge announced, I'd say, what, 2-3 weeks ago, the decision was that there is no contract. That when you sign up for the military, you're just giving yourself to them and they can do it. Anything they want. And where this comes up these days is stop loss, where they're telling people in the military, you're in until we let you out. And what they're giving them is papers now saying your termination date is 2031. Mm-hmm. And they're going,
you hear that? 2031.
Did you ever get a feeling of dread? That everything I say is all that you said. Did you ever get a feeling of dread? That everything I say is all that you said. Why do they want to take us to war? Yeah, why do they want to put us in a government's war? Cause all this fighting we don't know what for. So the rich get richer and the poor stay poor. Did you ever get a feeling of dread? That everything I say is all that you said. Did you ever get a feeling of dread? That everything I say is all that you said. Poisoning me up in the ground. So death comes with the devil makes a sound. Still the top of my outside choke on a diesel black clouds and the billowing smoke. Did you ever get a feeling of dread? That everything you say is all that you said. Did you ever get a feeling of dread? That everything you say is all that you said.
Registration rule is that from 18 to 26, you're supposed to register. And it's everybody. The other thing that comes up is illegal aliens are required to register. If they don't, that's one more reason to deport them if they get caught. There's a very small number of people who are not required to register. One of the things I learned in the Vietnam War was I had friends who were citizens of other countries. If you're a resident of this country and a citizen of another country, you're drafted. Now, you can leave, but if you stay here, you get drafted. If you're an American citizen and you live somewhere else, you can get drafted. We draft anyone, or we have anyone in the military who we can get.
A very interesting thing happened just recently. We got a call in my office from Washington, D.C., from Selective Service. And they wanted to come talk with us. And I said, why? And they said, well, one of the things they had noticed was that in Massachusetts, registration was definitely lower than in other places. And they wanted to talk with us about, you know, how they might improve that. And I kept thinking, do they know who we are? You know, like, this is a very unreal conversation. But I thought, well, why not? I said, sure, and then I went scrambling to talk to some other people. And so these two guys showed up from Selective Service. They both gave me the cards. One of them was like the head of communications or something or other. And they were greeted by five of us. We had this like interesting group of people waiting for them. I really almost felt sorry for them. And we'd done our homework. We had read all their stuff. One of the things we asked them about specifically, though, was in regard to this. One of the rumors that has fostered a lot of fear has been that if there's a draft, you'll only have 10 days between the time that Congress passes a draft and you're being drafted. And so you better have your case ready, because you'll have that 10 days is when you'll be able to apply for an exception, like being a CO or some other thing. Have your case file ready. And the Selective Service guy looked right at us and he said, well, you'll have 10 days once you actually get drafted. But our scenario, I mean, they have their whole job is to put together plans. What if this, what if that, what if the other thing? Their plan, if there's a reinstatement of the draft, is that they need 6 months between the time the president signs the legislation and the time somebody actually gets a draft notice. And there are a lot of reasons for that. One is, those hundreds of thousands of people who didn't register, the list they've got is woefully incomplete. The list they've got is actually in error. A lot of people know that they have to register when they're 18. But how many 18-year-olds, by the time they're 22, haven't moved And how many of those who've moved have bothered to tell Selective Service where they are now? The list is wrong. The list is almost worthless in terms of it's actually being able to be used, because it doesn't get people. It doesn't get the ones they've got, and it doesn't get all the people who didn't register at all. So they're going to have to kind of like use some combination of starting over and investigating it all. And then the other piece, which is really bizarre, and nobody ever thinks about it, is the military over the last several years has been downsized. Big time. There are 12 million people in the military in World War II. There are now 400,000?
Yeah.
Something like that?
480.
Here's the deal. When you sign up to join the military, you do not sign up at the recruiter's office and go to basic training that same weekend. You wait for a while. Why do you wait? They don't have room for you. Let's say there's a draft, and they want 50,000 more people right away. Where are they going to go for training? Yeah. Who's going to train them? One of the biggest crises in the recruiting issue right now isn't just enlisted men and women, it's officers. The officers aren't signing up for a second term. They don't have trainers.
She finally laid that hammer down. without a sin.
It's part of the whole direction we're going in. If training's going to be privatized. You're not going to go to Fort Dix to get trained anymore. You're going to go somewhere in Texas where there's a large piece of land somebody owns. And they're going to have private trainers.
Uh-huh.
And if they're private trainers, one of the things that you have to remember with any privatization with the military is Constitution is about what the government can do to people. In private, none of it counts anymore. And we're going to end up with a private army that has no laws about what the people in the military, how they're treated, what their rights are. You may not have many now, you'll have less. And so there's going to be bigger and bigger problems. The privatization of this country goes far beyond just the military. And one of the reasons is it gets away from rights. On the web, one of the things that does make this easier, there is great resources. I mean, just getting ready for this, I think I typed in Selective Service, I got their website. And they have, the frequently asked questions where it says, what is the penalty for not registering? You could be prosecuted and fined $250,000 and or put in jail for up to 5 years. Mm-hmm. Also, requirement to qualify, it's also a requirement for federal student aid, job training, and most federal benefits. One of the other things this mentioned, I was glancing through it, is if you're not a citizen, you won't become a citizen if you're not registered. So if you're in this country, you're not a citizen, and you're male and you're past the age of 26, theoretically, you cannot become a citizen. So there's a lot of those sorts of effects. There's also a number of sites about how to resist, what the reasons are, both philosophical and just plain, personal. www.resistors.info. So, I mean, there's loads of information out there. It's very easy to get it very quickly. So the good thing is, at the same time, the military is going with more and more problems and more ramping up ways to find people. There's more and more information, and there's a better network than there's ever been. When I was a kid, there was lots of word of mouth. You met somebody who'd been in the military, and they told you, don't believe the recruiters. You get into the military, and they tell the first... I remember somebody telling me, the first thing they tell you when you get in the military is, everything we told you doesn't matter anymore. We got you now. What happens in the National Guard when they activate you is they give you an activation date. First thing they do is they actually just... And this took a long time to understand. The first thing they do is they kind of tell you. There's nothing in writing. You get, told by your commander, we're being activated.
At some point.
At that point, you can't get out of the Guard anymore. That creates a lot of effect, and yet it's nothing. It's nothing in writing. There's no proof of it. People will call you and say, I heard from a friend that we're going to be activated, and I want out now. Well, it's too late now. Once that happens, eventually they will get a reporting date where they are, in New England, generally sent to Fort Dix. And at that point, my argument is, when you report to Fort Dix and you sign up, you're now federalized. You're now under federal jurisdiction. Now, that's my claim. And there's a couple of reasons I would argue it's true. One of which is, as you'll learn later, there's a national list of all people who are not in, who are supposed to be, but are AWOL or UA, whatever. They're not there. There's ways of finding out what your status is, whether you are listed as AWOL or a deserter, which, again, we'll talk about. Deserter doesn't mean what most people think it means. That list for the Army is at Fort Knox. Now, if you're in the Guard and you don't report, you never get on the list. And my argument is the reason is you haven't been federalized. Now, there has been a case just decided on the West Coast, I think in California, that states that once your unit has been, and this is the difference in argument, your unit has been federalized by being told they're activated. And that puts you under federal jurisdiction. I don't believe that'll hold up in court. That's what right now what the U.S. government is claiming. So their claim is that my guy, when his unit was activated, was federalized, he was stop loss, and he can't be out. The state National Guard agreed with me, and we're trying to get the paperwork done before the feds start trying to push this idea that it's unit activation. Nobody knows, because this has never come up. They haven't had to do this before.
Here is the important piece to remember at all times. If you change your mind, you don't have to go. What? But I signed a contract and I took an oath. That's right. And military regulations say that if you don't show up for basic training, the guidance counselor, that's the recruiter, the guidance counselor cancels the training reservation. Makes it sound like some college course, like
A training reservation?
Here's the way it can work. If you change your mind, you can write a letter to the commander of the recruiting station. Not the recruiter, the commander of the recruiting station. You don't have to know the commander's name, just write commander and the address of the form that's on the form that you signed. Hopefully you had enough sense to get a copy of your enlistment signed paper, but not everybody does, so sometimes they have to look it up in the phone book. But you don't even have to do that. And we know that you don't have to do it because the military, in their attempt to be inclusive of every possibility, gives a list of the reasons one might use for not going. We knew that we were onto something when down about, you know, part 17, one of the things that was on the list was apathy. So we knew that they really meant anything is okay reason. But here's what happens. Two things occur or don't occur, depending on how you want to point it out, when you write that letter. First of all, often what happens is nothing happens. You think you're going to get a letter back from the commander of the recruiting station saying, it's okay, you don't have to go. Nothing! Nothing is almost worse than saying you have to go, because it's like you don't know. You're not going to go the day that you don't show up for basic training, you know, the police will be there shortly to arrest you, because they haven't let you know that it's okay. But more likely than that is that if you indicate in any way to the recruiters that you have changed your mind and don't intend to show up for basic training, is that between the time you do that and the time you're scheduled to go for basic training, you will be harassed. Now, harassed, calls at your workplace, calls at your school, calls at your home, people showing up to talk with you, attempts to fake you out by saying things like, oh, right, I understand completely, of course, and we wouldn't want you to do something where you really don't want to go. In order to process your application to get out, you'll need to come in for an interview. No, you don't. There is nothing in the regs about interviews or anything else, and it's an attempt to get you into a room so that Sergeant Major so-and-so can yell at you and call you names. Don't go. I can't, how many times I have said that to people, just don't go. Write a letter if you want to, because, I mean, you did sign something, they're expecting you, and there's something about honoring your word. A lot of people feel bad when they say, like, but I said I was going. So let them know that you've changed your mind. It's within the regulations, you're allowed to change your mind. So you're not doing something bad. It's right there. You're allowed to change your mind. Besides threatening you with jail and other forms of destruction, they get inventive. One of the more interesting ones is that the night before you're supposed to go, they have a party for all the new recruits. And the party is at a hotel. And you stay at the hotel after the party, so that at 6 a.m., they know where you are. Because an awful lot happens between parties and 6 a.m. and people disappear. They use a lot of devices to try to get you to maintain that contract, as they call it, that thing you said. But here's the way it works. On the day of the event that you're supposed to go, if you show up, you don't show up at the training camp. You show up at what I call the bus station. What it is called is the Military Entrance Processing Station, MEPS. That is where you take a second oath. Then you're in. Then it counts. Then everything changes. Then you're under military jurisdiction. And, you know, it's a whole other ballgame. But until you do that, you get to change your mind. The odd thing about this is it turns out that precisely the same thing happens if you join the reserves or the National Guard. And between the time you join and the time you're scheduled for basic training, you think, what was the matter with me? Why did I do that? For instance, if you're in the reserves or the Guard, you may have gone to several weekend drills once a month before basic training happened. And the first two drills, you came away going, oh my God, what did I get into? And you don't go to basic training. Guess what? You're out. No record of criminal activity, no punishment, no jail time, no nothing. Now, I have to tell you, in Massachusetts, remember, with the National Guard, you're also state. In Massachusetts, if you pull this one in the National Guard, they could fine you $200. And I tell people that, they go, that's it? I'll pay, where do I pay? So some of it seems absurd and funny, but the real entry point here is really hard for people to believe it when you tell them, because they did take an oath and they did sign something. And so you say, you who are the anonymous person on the phone that they don't know, say to them, no, you don't have to go. And you say to the recruiter, but the counselor said I don't have to go. And the recruiter, who's in this nice pressed uniform and seems authoritative and basically tells you some amazing story. I mean, they make the stuff up, folks. I'm going to tell you my best one, because it's clear what's going on when you hear this one. If you don't show up to basic training, there will be a black check mark next to your social security number for the rest of your life. They make it up. They really do. They pull out whatever they can think to get you to come to basic training and take that second oath, and then you're in. Every counselor's got a list of stories like this, because it's so hard to believe. But the Army regulation here that applies to the National Guard and the Reserves reads exactly like the delayed entry program's regulations. You know, the guidance counselor, the training session gets canceled, you know. And there's another one we found recently where it also applies, which was really a surprise. These days, they try to get you in by making it painless. And what they're doing now is they're giving the training in what's called a split option. They're even doing it this way. You're a junior in high school, and you sign up. And the summer between your junior year and senior year, you do the first part of basic training. And after you graduate, you do the second part. That's when you get your job, your advanced training, your MOS, mm-hmm. your occupation. It gives you a second chance to say no. You go to the first part, and then you don't go to the second part. Same thing. Phase two, the guidance counselor cancels the training session. So they give you get two chances when they do. They give you the split option to say no. But it's always the same thing. We've learned enough now. And on the letter that's written by Neil, that accompanies the piece of paper about if you change your mind in your packet, you will see the actual regulations cited. Because we found that if we simply say to people, you don't have to go, they don't believe us. So we say, okay, it's AR 630 point. Look it up on the web, you'll see it for yourself. It's like, oh, okay. Because it's so hard to believe. But, you know, my point is, if you don't go to basic training, you were never in.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, break on through to the other side, yeah.
For more information about these subjects, check out GI Rights Hotline at www.girights.objector.org. They are a network of non-profit, non-governmental organizations who provide information to service members about military discharges, grievance and complaint procedures, and other civil rights. Robert Dove can be reached at rdove@afsc.org. We heard music from Devo, Beautiful World, My Vietnam by Pink, Souls of the Departed by Bruce Springsteen, Did You Ever Get a Feeling, The Suicide Machines, Red Dirt Girl by Emmylou Harris,
to the other side.
This is WBCR LP 97.7 on your FM dial, broadcasting from downtown Great Barrington in the Berkshire Hills of Western Massachusetts. This is Mickey Friedman, and this is The Other Side.